we do these the same way, and people have heard your name before, but I think we'll have you introduce yourself just for kicks.
Okay. Hello, everybody out there. This is Tim DeLauder, alive and well, Scorpio Rising.
You've changed the name of the band to Scorpio Rising from Polyphonic Spree. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Why not? I mean, you could change. What if you just changed the name of the band every single time you play?
You know, I would do that. I think I would lose some fans, but I'd gain fans that are looking for new bands, you know?
Yeah,
so
right.
I think it's like a canceling out.
The hipsters would be like, dude, it's a new same guy, new band.
Exactly.
But it's weird because they're playing the same music. Wait a minute. Somebody's pulling something on me here. 4 years, right?
4 years.
4 years.
Yeah, four years since the Fragile Army. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
As I'm looking at it right now. Yep.
Yeah. And what's intriguing to me, and I'm saying this personally for me, is that, you know, it's kind of like Panasonic used to say when they put out their TVs that they were just slightly ahead of their time. But there was no, when I was listening to this, it's not about time, and it wasn't about influence. Back then, it was about that you had been through a lot of things. There are a lot of things that happened, which nobody needs to. You know, we never go back to bios here. We don't talk about influences.
Right.
These are big wastes of time.
Right.
People can look that up. We'll just refer to the fact that there were things that happened that weren't good,
mm-hmm.
and there was a thought on your part that perhaps, you know, you could take all those influences, all that stuff that happened, and channel it a different way. So 12 years ago, it was ahead of its time because the messages in music 12 years ago, there was this transition, and it was a weird moment in the world 12 years ago. And I know exactly what I was going through then, so it was a weird moment in the world, was it not?
It definitely was. And we were leaving in a kind of an aggressive time. A grunge era was coming to an end, and I don't think people really knew where they were going at that time. I certainly, I didn't know where I was going to end up, so I'm glad I ended up in this experiment.
And then, and then you open up a record with an 8 minute and 40 something second piece and say, yeah, okay, guys, before we even get anything that sounds poppy, I'm going to challenge the living shite out of you.
Right, exactly. Well, it was never meant to. The Polyphonic Spree was literally an experiment in the beginning stages of it, hence the beginning stages, because it was never meant to be a band that was going to go out and tour and release albums and all that. It was just something that was an experiment. I wanted to see what it was like to put those elements together, have those people on the same stage making music, and that's all it was. And then out of sheer demand, it became a band and became something that, oh, we have to go make a record and yada, yada, yada. So
it took America a long, 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 long time to get what this was, if there was anything that had to be gotten.
Yeah.
And the UK embraced it
immediately. Yeah.
So I heard a quote from you that America was jaded.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a negative, but I think we are.
I could only go by being an American and being saturated in the music business. And I have a record store, and I've been in a band for, you know, prior to that, I was in a band for 10 years, and I that's the first thing that came to mind. Going over there, it was like immediate. Over, even in my hometown, the Polyphonic Spree was a real head scratcher for people there. It just didn't translate very well, hence why we spent the next 3 years in the UK and Europe, because it was totally accepted. And, you know, David Bowie was a huge component of bringing us over there, so that helped out. And they all just, everyone was on the wagon with us, which was fantastic. And then we come over here and it's like, wah, wah.
We're the land of the free and the land of the brave. And I mean, you're from Texas, the home of so many, you know, okay, admittedly also Lyndon Johnson and, you know, and other people there. There's the other side of the fence.
Real nut jobs
out there, but you would still think that we, because the Brits are known for being, and there are people who are British who are going to be listening to this show, you know, but they're known for being stuck up and for being the guys who stand guard for the Queen and all of that, right?
Yeah, but they weren't.
But that's why they have to let loose.
They do. I don't know what it is, but they're so ready for things that are left of center, and they celebrate bands here that, they celebrate American bands a traditional blues and rock bands and your old greats that we tend to have taken for granted through the years, and or they had their time, but the newer audiences don't tend to embrace them where they do over there. And so I don't know. I mean, it was so refreshing, and I love it over there, and I love it over here as well. But I think that, I don't know, we're westernized. I don't know. I mean, we've been ignored by commercial radio and commercial mainstream success in our country, and but my gosh, on the commercial side and in television and film, we're celebrated, and it's great because it helps us out, a band of our size, you know, to be able to have, you know, this kind of backing. And when we first came into it, it wasn't really cool for bands to do commercials in general. We were coming out of, you know, Kurt Cobain era when it's like corporate, you know, anything corporate we're not down with. And that's called selling out. Where today, I mean, every band is basically being broken on television. And the first time we did it was through the Apple, Apple iPod. Yeah. And they actually were the first band that they ever did an advertisement with our name on it, and that was part of, we just requested that if we let them use it, said, hey, could you get a shot of our name on the iPod? And they said, that's a great idea.
My question is, what other profit? You have merchandise, you have what you get at the door, and then you have people that will pay you real money to do other pop culture related things. And advertising, to me, has always been part of pop. When it's done well, it's always part of pop culture.
I totally agree. And to hit that even further, our song, that particular song, was used in the UK for Sainsbury, Light and Day. And it won an award last year for the longest running song in a campaign, beating I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing.
Isn't that amazing? That'd be Coca-Cola, man.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the things I heard you say to this day, which probably always shocks people, is that small venues are better for this big band.
We love it, and I think it doesn't really make sense, because, you know, a band of this size needs more stage to be able to get everybody up there and all their instruments and stuff, but we tend to like play better and have a better of a time and seem to like connect with the audience better when we're all really in a tight group. So I actually really prefer it.
So I never got to ask you this, but I was thinking about this afternoon. How do you know when somebody is right for the Spree? When you're looking at members, right? I mean, there's so many things you have to look at. I mean, obviously they really have to play, because you ain't got no stinking major backing tracks.
Exactly.
So they've got to be able to play their horn or play their guitar or play their, you know, whatever it is. So that's one thing. There's obviously got to be, I mean, not everybody has to be beautiful by any stretch of the imagination, but certainly looks play a part. But then there's probably this undefinable thing where you look at them and go, you know what, this is going to work on stage.
You know what, we've been really fortunate in the 12 years we've been doing this, and there's been a lot of people in this band that have, you know, come and gone. Some of them are out doing things right now, and other bands and doing really contributors to music. But we've been really fortunate. We've only had probably two people that just flat out didn't work, you know. And you didn't know. We were in the heat of touring, and it's like we needed someone kind of quick, and we got them in. And no one really knew anything about this person, and it was a kind of a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde situation. But we've been really fortunate. I think it comes down to, and this was a choir member, but someone that plays an instrument, there's a lot of time spent together playing to make sure that they're, you know, up to speed, so to speak. And
are you a taskmaster?
Oh yeah.
I can't imagine.
I am. I have to snap that whip.
So we've gotten a teaser, which I got the single. I played it. I was like, whoa, it's back. This is cool. The message is continuing, all of that. And from what I've heard, you haven't even really decided yet what's next, have you?
No, we haven't. We have our own label, Good Records Recordings, and we're releasing singles off of that. And we're just kind of doing it at our leisure. We did Bullseye, which was the first one. We released it as an app. And then the second one is What Would You Do? And so we're just trucking along, man. When we feel like releasing another single, we'll do it.
So how appropriate was the Nobel Peace Prize Awards? How insane, and how, like, if you were picking, like, again, what fits a band, right? How insanely fortuitous is that kind of thing.
Well, just to be associated with that event, and when Gari Matai, the woman that won the actual prize, it was pretty amazing experience. But I mean, we're playing up there with some heavy hitters, and there was a surreal moment at one point at the end of it when they said, "Tim, we want you to come up there and sing with the host of the event and some of the other artists." I'm like, "Okay." And they said, "We want you in the middle, and then you're going to hold hands. And so Oprah Winfrey's going to be on your left, and Tom Cruise will be on your right, and you're going to all hold hands. You're going to sing 'Imagine' by John Lennon." And I'm like, "Okay." So I'm up there singing in Norway on the stage in front of all these people with, you know, Cyndi Lauper and Patti LaBelle, and we're singing 'Imagine,' which was completely surreal.
Yeah, and it's interesting. And again, I don't refer to references, but it was so funny because as I was listening to the White album, mm-hmm. and I'm listening to the opening, and then it hit me. I'm like, yeah, there's a hell of a lot of Beatles in here.
Oh yeah.
And again, it wasn't even about influences, but it was like it was like I'm listening to the White album, and I'm listening to the White album.
Yeah, totally. I love the White album, and you can find things when you go back and listen to it, but it was completely at the beginning. It was just a stream of consciousness, you know, and is when all those songs were written, because they were written really quick, and this record was recorded in 3 days. We basically just, and that's mixed and recorded, so we had thrown everyone in there, and a lot of these people had never even heard the songs before. It's just, it all came together really organically. But when I go back and hear it, I can hear certain things as well. And hey, I was a fan of. There's all I hear. Percy Faith on there, you know, from when I was a kid. I love those.
But scarily enough.
Yeah.
Ancient, right? But that's
yeah.
what our dads and that's what our parents listened
yeah,
to.
Yeah, and
beautiful
it's
beautiful music.
Beautiful music.
That's what it was called. That was the category. Beautiful music.
Yeah, I love it.
It turned into gosh knows what it turned
yeah,
into.
It was
a mush.
Yeah, it was horrible. But man, you listen to some of those arrangements and those strings.
Oh,
it's just
stuff.
Out of bounds.
I just have to pull this quote out because people. Probably, and again, I always consider it my job to kind of like really just go straight as a bullseye and clear out some of the nonsense.
Please.
So they probably, I bet people are like, Polyphonic Spree, that's a hipster band. And I love this quote, "We offer relief from the seductive trap of cool." When you look back on all of this, what's the one thing you say to yourself and say, okay, there's a reason I'm going to keep going?
Say, my God, I can't believe I've been going this long, 12 years, for something that I never even thought was going to be what it has become. And the difference it's made in a lot of people's lives. And I say that because we're constantly getting, you know, mail and people come and tell us, you know, what this music means. I had no idea that the impact it was going to have on people in general. I was just, it was a self-indulgent move for this band to happen at the beginning. It was merely for me, for my, you know, I wanted to see what it was like to have those sounds. And so I can't believe it's gone this long. And then here we are and keep it on. And there's nothing that's going to stop it unless it's time to check out. But
so I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. Okay. And it's two of your songs as the bread and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.